There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Here we go. FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Tuesday, a week out from Fat Tuesday. Glad you're here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Lots to do on the show. I will say this, just as we got done hearing the classic line from Governor Ivey about the high-stepping turkeys, we got to dig into this. As I have not seen the governor make any appearances with Clyde or Henrietta, the high-stepping turkeys, since that pardon back before Thanksgiving. But tomorrow, Alabama Governor Kay Ivey is going to be speaking in Maplesville, which, I mean, if with a name like Maplesville, it's going to be a town. I know it's not a city. Also, I know my state geography. But Maplesville, she's going to be there tomorrow announcing the infrastructure improvement plans for the state. In other words, the gas tax discussion. Already you have Republican Executive Committee had voted against any move on a gas tax here. The governor is getting some political headwinds already. Session doesn't even get started for a week. Maybe if she brought Clyde and Henrietta with her to the announcement tomorrow, that would soften up Republicans in the House and Senate, maybe help her with this. Just an idea, just a trial balloon I'm floating out there for the governor. All right, coming up on today's show, lots to do. We will talk Mardi Gras, more Mardi Gras talk coming up in hour number two with Steve Joint from the Mobile Mask. Also, Brendan Kirby joins us this hour. And speaking of Mardi Gras, we've been talking about it since about this time last week, when Sergeant Joey Goff with the Mobile Police Department was talking with us on the show last week about Families of the Fallen and this float project going on. The head of the floral parade on Saturday will be afloat with 27 people on there that are from families that have lost an officer in the line of duty or severely injured, and they're from our area, and they're on the float on Saturday. Make sure to give them a huge, huge round of cheers as they head down the Parade Route A on Saturday. But at the same time, in the short term, we're making sure the float that they roll on, this great float they have at the head of the floral parade, has tons of throws. And we're checking in right now with Sergeant Joey Goff, Mobile Police Department. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Sean.
Hey, okay, so where do we stand right now with getting this float loaded? I mean, I want it loaded like we'd have to crawl over the throws.
After we talked on last week, I talked to Chuck McKay today, and he said that we've had about $700 in cash donations and about $400 worth of actual throws that were purchased for the Family of the Fallen. So if we could get double that, if we could get people to come out and help us out and probably get about double that, I think that we'll be in good shape.
All right. So if people want to do the throws, they can do actual throws. They can buy moon pies and beads and cups and all that kind of stuff. Or if they say, hey, yes, I don't have time right now, they can do a cash check donation.
That's correct. They can either, if they can call, or they can go by Gulf Coast Beads at 5017 Cottage Hill Road and talk to Chuck and the employees there and let them know, I would like to donate X amount of dollars, or I want to buy 5 cases of moon pies or 4 cases of beads, and Chuck will sell them the product at cost, and that will be put on our account.
Okay. Tell folks again, because I briefly mentioned it, but explain to people listening the people on the float, these families. Just tell us who is going to be riding.
Okay. The families of the fallen, the people that are going to be actually on the float, are going to be family members of officers that have been killed in the line of duty. And I think the oldest one goes back to the early 70s. And we have 8 families of fallen officers, and then we have one officer that was shot and injured in the line of duty and had to medically retire, and he's going to be riding on the float also.
So these families have, I mean, going through the pain from, like you said, from back in the 70s, but to names that people know from the last 2 years, last year.
Yes. Their
families are there. We have children on this float that have lost a loved one that was killed in the line of duty, law enforcement. And this is this doesn't change everything, but hopefully for a couple hours, it gives them a little sunshine in their life.
Yes, that's our goal is for them to be able to come together with other members of law enforcement, other people who have actually suffered the same tragedy that they have, and just have some more camaraderie and more brotherhood or familyhood, I guess I could say, and just to let them know that their sacrifice and the sacrifice of their loved one has not been forgotten and will never be forgotten.
Yeah, this is a two-part deal where we're going to stack this float full of throws here between now and Thursday. But beyond that, I want everybody to know the positioning of the float. So when we're out at the floral parade, which is a great one, and that first float comes rolling, people know who they're seeing.
Yes, that's what we're going to do is we're going to have actual pictures of each fallen officer in front of each spot on the float for their family. That way, if you don't recognize the family members, you'll see the officer's picture, and that kind of lets you know that they're with that particular officer.
Let's talk about the float that they are riding on. This has been given to y'all to use for the parade on Saturday. Let's talk about who did that.
The Mobile Mystics loaned us the floats.
Good job.
Which saved us just about $2,000 on having to actually rent a float, because those things are not cheap to rent. So we are very appreciative of the Mobile Mystics for donating that float to us, and they also donated some throws and some cash for us too.
Well, I just want to make sure Mobile Mystics, great job. Way to step up and do that. And this is the first year. You're already planning with Families of the Fallen to do this again next year.
Yes, we actually we had met with some of the different martyr organizations, and we're telling them what our goal was, what we wanted to do, and we've had a lot of people step up and offer support and offer, you know, throws and money. And we've had the floral parade was the first parade that actually said, hey, we want you to come ride with us.
Love
and
it.
I've already had three other organizations contact us and say, hey, we want you next year. But unfortunately, you know, we already told somebody, hey, you got us next year. And so we're getting this lined up for, you know, to continue as long as we can continue rolling the float.
We're going to make sure that goes on for ever. That's once again remind folks they're listening to us right now, and if you're just joining us, talking to Mobile Police Department Sergeant Joey Goff about Families of the Fallen, this 501(c) charity. 100% of y'all's donations go to these families. It is all volunteer administered. Remind folks they want to make the donation in money, they want to make the donation in throws. Walk us through how we can do that at the precincts and at Gulf Coast Beads.
Okay, we have three different locations where you can make a donation of either throws or cash, cashier's check or money order. That's going to be at Mobile Police Headquarters at 2460 Government Street, 2nd Precinct of Mobile Police Department, which is in Tillman's Corner right there before you get to I-10 on Highway 90, and then the 4th Precinct on Airport Boulevard just before you get to the airport on the right side. You can go to those locations and drop off actual physical throws, beads, margaritas, or trinkets, whatever you want to drop off, or you can drop off a cash or a check donation.
Okay, so I come walking into 4th Precinct with my arms full of boxes of moon pies. They're not going to say, what are you doing?
No, they're, everybody knows what's going on. The chief has given us permission to use those three locations as a collection point, and we're very appreciative of the chief Batiste for letting us to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once again, people want more information about the charity because y'all are working for these families year round. Where do they go?
You can find us on Facebook at Family of the Fallen on Facebook, or you can go to www.familyofthefallen.org, and that has our mission statement. It has the pictures of the fallen officers from our area, and it has our a donate button. And if you feel like donating some money, you can do that. Also, if you donate, if you go by one of these precincts and you drop off a check, you can make sure the check out to Family of the Fallen. What we'll do is we will take a picture of that check, we will send you a thank you card, and we will also include our tax ID number so you can claim that on your taxes, a charitable donation.
Great stuff. Joey, as always, man, y'all, our hearts are with you, and hopefully we will stack up the money in throws today, and by this time tomorrow, you'll say, enough, Sullivan, we got the throws.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. And one more thing, we're going to have three officers, three Honor Guard members that are going to be walking in front of the float, carrying a folded flag, and at three or four different locations along the parade route, they're going to do a flag trading ceremony where one officer is going to salute the flag, hand it off to the other officer. He's going to salute the flag, and then the parade will start back up. And we just ask people that once you, if you see the float stop in front of you, and you see the officers are getting ready to perform a little ceremony with the flag, please be reverent. Don't ask for beads. We're going to get the people on the float to, you know, tell them, hey, when we stop the floats at these particular locations, stop throwing, you know, anything off the float. And that way it's going to be a solemn moment of respect for, you know, the flag and for the fallen officers.
Well said. Well said. Thank you. And we'll talk here soon. And hopefully people are rolling into the precincts and headquarters right now with all the throws, all the moon pies that y'all can stand.
All right, Sean, I appreciate all the hard work you've been doing for me.
No worries, man. No worries. It is a small, small thing on our end. Y'all are doing the heavy lift. Law enforcement taking the heavy burden for our community. All right, 1217, coming right back. Brendan Kirby joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 1220, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. And my buddy that donated the $250 this morning, if the money would be matched, well, go ahead and get the checkbook out. You just got match. So if you're listening, get the check by over at Precinct 2, 4, or headquarters, or we can just go meet up in person and do that by over at Gulf Coast Beads. All right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5. As we're talking about money here, you hear the probably in the news at the top of the hour, you probably heard the big number, the $93 trillion is what the tally is for the Green New Deal. But did you know what you, that means you or your household will owe if this thing goes through? Yeah, I didn't either until I read the latest story over at Kirby on Politics from Brendan Kirby, and he joins us now to talk more about it. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Well, not real good. Not real good. So, because I started looking through this. So, you're reporting on this over at KirbyOnPolitics.com, and you, so I heard the big number here, $93 trillion for the Green New Deal, you know, this juggernaut that Senator or Representative Cortez brings up. But then I see my household owes $39,000 just for the low carbon electricity grid. And it goes up from there. You start tallying what each household has to pay to equal the $93 trillion. And you put me in a bad mood, Brendan.
Well, yeah. And, of course, this all comes from a study from a think tank called the American Action Forum, which is headed by Douglas Holtz Eakin, who used to be the director of the Congressional Budget Office. So you might remember the CBO being treated as the gold standard during right. the various Obamacare and tax debates. Remember, we have to take whatever they say.
Yes.
At
no
face
argue.
Value.
Yes.
And so, look, they freely admit when you're talking about something this ambitious that for now exists as a 14-page resolution without actual legislation, it's hard to score, as the budgeteers say. So they make some guesses and assumptions, and they got some pushback from Representative Ed Markey, who's one of the co-sponsors. But even if they're off, this is still a lot of money, and that per household cost, of course, you know, that is just sort of a way of putting it into perspective, because we get taxes from other sources as well. But no matter how you slice it, their low end estimate is $51.1 trillion over a decade, all the way up to $92.9 trillion. And if you're having trouble figuring out really how much money that is, consider that $93 trillion is more than the entire value of all the goods and services produced in a year, not just by our country, but by all countries. So that's a lot of money.
Oh, wow. The big number is jaw-dropping, but this breakdown, this per household, and I get it. I mean, this is, and like we deal in the fair world here, so this is a 14-page document without a lot of detail. You also have different funding sources, and they've talked about cutting money from one place to move to another and all that. But if you do break it down by household, with that said, like I mentioned, you put here building a low-carbon electricity grid. Electricity grid is $5.4 trillion. That's about $39,000 per household. But it goes up there because, I mean, you've got the jobs guarantee, $6.8 trillion. to $44.6 trillion. So that would range from $49,000 to $322,000 per household?
Right, exactly. And, you know, and again, we have a progressive taxation system, so this wouldn't be split evenly.
No, no, that means some people are going to be paying.
The higher percentage you get that. But what it shows is when AOC says, oh, well, don't worry about the taxes. We're going to pay for this like we pay for everything else, you know, through targeted investment and, you know, borrowing money. And, you know, she sort of seems to make it seem like we can have all this and, you know, borrow some money and maybe sock the rich and get them to pay their fair share. That's not going to cut it. Not with something this big. We couldn't borrow. Even the United States couldn't borrow that sum of money. And there simply is not enough wealth concentrated among the rich to do it. Look, I mean, I look at it this way. If Congress were to do any individual thing on that list, one of them is universal health care, you know, the Bernie Medicare for All plan.
Yeah, this is part of the Green New Deal. This is part of the Green, let everybody know.
That's just one piece of the Green New Deal. $33 or $36 billion over 10 years. You know, there's a reason why that hasn't sailed through Congress, and it's because that would be a jaw-droppingly huge amount of money for the federal government to come up with. And to them, that's just like one box on the list to check off. You know, they promise to do the whole thing. So, you know, it's beyond the money, too. There's serious questions about whether it's technologically even feasible to do. I mean, can we just stop using fossil fuels in 10 years? A lot of analysts say we can't do that because we don't have the technology to replace it and still produce as much energy as we're producing now. You know, so that's number one. And, you know, the job guarantee, you know, how would that even work? Like, you know, like who would make those decisions? And, you know, if someone didn't want to hire you, like, I mean, it's just a lot of logistical.
Yeah,
detail.
Explain that too. People haven't
studied. Assume we could do it all, and what would it cost?
Well, explain that. If people haven't studied that, the jobs guarantee angle, this would be for people displaced by the Green New Deal, right?
Well, for people displaced and everyone else. I mean, it would say you're guaranteed to have a job. So, well, what if you know, no one wants to hire you? You know, what if and by the way, not a job, but a job that pays a family system wage.
Yes.
And you know, so are you going to just like force businesses to, you know, to hire people and pay them a high minimum wage, or is the government just going to give make work jobs to everyone? You know, who can't find a job in the private sector? I mean, that would be I would think it would take years to figure out how to do that and to set up the bureaucracy to handle that and all that. And they say that this is the world's going to end in 10 or 12 years. And,
right.
And you know, we don't have time to do it. They said they aim to do it at lightning speed. And I just, you know, I just wonder how that would be done just from a technical basis.
I mean, I could argue that, you know, to play devil's advocate here, something could be done as you retool infrastructure to get away from fossil fuels. It'll be like a WPA or a CCC from back in the Depression, and you could put those people that would be displaced or don't have jobs to work on these crews doing these things. But that's assuming that these people have the skill set to do those jobs. This is different than
right.
Building stairs at Monte Sano State Park up in Huntsville, you know, or working.
Right. We're not going to be just handing shovels to thousands
right.
of people and saying dig. You know, they have to have specialized skills. And especially if we're going to, you know, one of the parts of the plan is we're going to have high speed rail everywhere. It takes some skills and knowledge to be able to do that. But if we're just going to for the sake of giving everyone jobs, have everyone, you know, build it by hand like they built the railroad in the 19th century, I don't think we could build it all in 10 years, Sean.
Right, and here's the problem, too.
I think you could need much more than that.
It seems like the proponents of this, too, and I'm sure they'll argue because you have to, you know, try to negotiate past the point you want to actually get. But because it's like this all or nothing mentality, there's some people like me, I'll include myself there, that I'm a fan of alternative energies. And when they make economic sense, I'd much rather have solar and wind and other alternative energies producing than fossil fuels, I'm in. Even with what it means to our area. I know it'd be tough because a lot of jobs here with it. But at the same time, I'm realistic that you can't in a decade's time all of a sudden convert this. And at the same time, you can't displace that many workers and have them trained and have them doing completely new jobs in 10 years. And because it has to be this all or nothing, certain parts of it that maybe you could do, maybe make environmental improvements around common sense environmental improvements, they don't want to hear that because it's an all or nothing. It's like a zero-sum game argument. At least that's what I'm hearing from Ocasio-Cortez and Markey and the others.
Yeah, absolutely. And because of that, too, there's a lot of strange redundancy in this just giant scheme. And I could save them some money on this plan just by trimming it a little bit. And I'll give you an example. One of the things they said, we got to get rid of all the sources, the dirty sources of air. So no more coal plants, no more natural gas, no more fossil fuel producing plants. And they also want to retrofit every building in America to be able to, take on clean energy source, I guess solar panels, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, why would you need to retrofit all the buildings if there are no dirty sources of electricity at the source anymore? It seems like that's adding a huge amount of cost that would be unnecessary, right? Because if all of the grid is getting power from solar and wind and magic fairy dust or whatever it is that we come up with to replace the dirty sources, then you wouldn't need to put solar panels on everyone's house, right?
Right. They're doing two. And part of it, and we're going to run the news break here and come right back more with Brendan Kirby from KirbyOnPolitics.com. But there's two things going on here. There is a movement that I'm pretty interested in. Instead of having a grid where you would produce your energy for your home, your business, there, if you could, if you had conditions where solar or wind would make sense. But like Brendan says, then you wouldn't need the energy coming from the grid by definition. All right, we'll stumble more through the Green New Deal. Plus, Brendan has a take on the Democrat President Trump should be most scared of, and it's not even a name you've heard of yet, but could we see this name in 2020?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. I'm talking with our buddy Brendan Kirby from KirbyOnPolitics.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile. I'm going to frame it this way here. So just pick two of these texts from the text line. I like this. Both sides of it. So Greg says, I've had enough of AOC, this woman that has a 420 credit score and is on the financial board in Congress. Something's not right. Liberal math is ridiculous. Unnamed texter says, it's only a resolution, a lofty goal. Calm down. You are fear-mongering. How much does your family already owe on the debt? Oh, getting me in the get spot, because that's another irritant to me. I think it's $161,000 average out per household now. So, Brendan, yeah, you're fear-mongering here. It's only a resolution.
Well, I mean, it is only a resolution, so obviously you'd have to fill it in with details that would be provided by actual legislation. But presumably the actual legislation will bear some resemblance to the resolution, and the resolution is quite broad and sweeping. There's no way. You can quibble over what the numbers are. This think tank that did this study had to make assumptions to come up with the numbers. So you make different assumptions, you get different numbers. But no matter how you slice it, there's no way we can guarantee a job for everyone, and health care, and food security, and paid vacation, and a livable wage, and pay parity for people who lose their jobs when the Green Revolution takes over, and converting all of our power sources to clean sources, and retrofitting every building, and building high-speed rail everywhere so that air travel is obsolete. Can't do all that on the cheap. I mean, it's kind of like one of those things that you needed a study to tell you that.
Yeah.
You can see it. Just one small example. California wanted to build a high-speed rail line from L.A. to San Francisco. One line, 520 miles. And the cost ballooned to $77 billion and would not be completed until 2033. And the very liberal governor of California pulled the plug on it earlier this month, so we can't afford it. Multiply that one project by the whole country, and you get an idea of the kind of cost that it would entail. And as I said before, you know, there's redundancy. Why do you need to retrofit buildings if all your power sources are going to be clean anyway? Why do you need to spend $1.5 billion on food security if everyone is going to make a livable wage? You know, they can buy their own food. So, right. You know, some of this stuff just doesn't make sense just from a redundancy standpoint. And I just, you know, I think if the goal is to convert to cleaner sources of energy and build the consensus that you would need to do that, best to focus on that aspect of it and try to reach common ground with conservatives who, you know, would go along with clean energy sources if the technology were there to make the price competitive with fossil fuels, and leave out the whole rest of the liberal socialist agenda, because you're just going to turn people off who you might otherwise have on your side.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's what I'm saying. It's all or nothing mentality that gets, as always, everybody runs their corner, right? Everybody's going to be like, all of this is horrible or all of this is great. And in reality, like most things, there's some, you know, there's some subtlety. There's some things and objectives here for a cleaner air and cleaner water that, man, I'm on board. And I would suggest that as a fan of alternative energies, I'm a solar guy and do all that stuff. If you use more carrot and less stick, you'll probably see, incentivize individuals, not companies, incentivize individuals to be able to, save money on taxes or get this bonus or something like that. You'll see more people put in, you know, and take their own time and their own risk to convert to some sort of alternative energy. But coming in with a 10-year window and a bureaucratic mandate, I think you're going to get nothing but kickback from a lot of people, even some Democrats.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Democrats. I'll tell you one. The chief Democrat who seems skeptical of this is Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
She's been very cool to this and has supported it as far as it goes. But you don't see her rushing to take a vote on it. And she said some things that were kind of dismissive of it, something along the lines of, well, they believe in what they believe, right? You know, something along those lines. So, you know, Nancy Pelosi is not a conservative or even a moderate, but she is a realist, and she knows politics pretty well. I think she's probably best at politics, and she knows that the political consensus is not there for anything close to this.
All right, I want to shift gears here, and this is pretty interesting, because a name you're about to roll out here is not one of the names you hear discussed all the time when it comes to the field of Democrats that want to be president in 2020. I mean, there's no Cory Booker, there's no Kamala Harris, there's no Bloomberg on this thing, there's no O'Rourke. This is a name we hadn't heard of yet for a lot of folks. Who is this? And you say this could be the Democrat who would scare President Trump the most.
Yeah, Sherrod Brown. Are you saying that Sherrod Brown is not rolling off the tongues of all Americans?
It does not seem to be a kitchen table name. Yeah, it's not a kitchen table name at my house.
And that would be his biggest problem. Sherrod Brown, for those who don't know, is a senator from Ohio. And I was just looking through the very long and growing list of Democrats who are running for president or thinking of running for president. Joe Biden seems to be the latest. You know, there are reports today that he's hiring staff in New Hampshire. And, you know, when you talk about who the top tier Democrat candidates are, it usually starts with Joe Biden, who has a lot of name recognition. And then you get some of the other ones you mentioned, and Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, something like that. I'm not making predictions. You know, the president is not very popular. Could be that any of those Democrats could be. If the Democrats nominate someone like Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or Elizabeth Warren, who are running real hard left, it could be that against Trump, it's a replay of the 2016 election, which is something I think Democrats would want to avoid. The other way they could go is to pick kind of a Midwest populist like Sherrod Brown, who is liberal. He's not a moderate, and he's got a very liberal voting record. But he also culturally comes from the kinds of places that Democrats lost big time in the last election and need to win back, Ohio. And just take Ohio. If Sherrod Brown were in the race, he has won 5 out of the 6 statewide races he's run in Ohio. He's very well known and liked there. he'd be tough for Trump to beat in Ohio. And no Republican has ever won the presidency, going all the way back to Lincoln, without winning Ohio. So if you're a Republican, you don't win Ohio, you don't win. And that is more true now than it's been in the past, given how, you know, polarized and divided we are, you know, pretty evenly. How would Trump make up his 18 electoral votes if he lost Ohio? Because the voters, the white working class voters that Brown would do much better with than Elizabeth Warren, aren't just in Ohio. This is the same kind of voters in Pennsylvania, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan. Those are all states that Trump won, and they're all states that have a high concentration of what I call the Obama-Trump counties. Counties, there's 200-plus counties in this country that voted twice for Obama and then voted for Trump. And the Democrats need to win those counties back. And a guy like Sherrod Brown, I think, would be much better positioned to do it than Elizabeth Warren.
And with that, I mean, because the name out of these, that populist vibe, you know, to me was Biden. But that is because I'm ignorant to Sherrod Brown. I don't know it. You're saying he's more of that, and obviously geographically more important to Democrats than a Biden.
Yeah, look, I mean, you can't write Biden off by virtue of the fact that he was the vice president, and he's pretty well known, and so he's topping all these early polls because of that. My caution with Biden is he's run for president twice before, and he went nowhere both times. So I agree with a lot of the things people say about Biden, that he does have that kind of appeal, that he's not viewed as like a crazy liberal and can't appeal to those same kinds of voters. So I would put Biden in that camp. I'm just a little weary of anointing him because he's very gas prone. He hadn't run a competitive race in a long, long time. You know, unless you count, you know, his role as vice president, which no one really pays attention to. And you know, again, I mean, he never caught fire in either of the other two times he ran for president. So, but yeah, I think they'd be better off with Biden than I'll just give you one example. Some of the Democratic presidential candidates are coming out and endorsing the idea of slavery reparations. That's something I don't think Sherrod Brown would do, and I don't have a PhD in political science, but I'm guessing the white blue-collar workers without college education are probably not going to vote for a candidate that says they have to pay for the sins of slavery. I just don't think that's a way to win those votes. And there's an assumption among some in the Democratic Party that the demographics of the country are now such that they don't have to worry about those voters. All they have to do is build this coalition of minority voters and college-educated whites, and they can win elections. And eventually that will probably be true. I'm not sure if we're there yet now, though. There's still a lot of white voters without college education, and a lot of them at least open to voting for Democrats, but they're not going to vote for Democrats if they think that that they're insulting them and blaming them for their own problems. And that is where a guy like Sherrod Brown, I think, would do much better then. And again, just based on electoral history, he won re-election last year pretty handily, even though the Democrats lost the open governor seat in Ohio, and even though four of his Democratic colleagues in the Senate lost their re-election bids. So even, you know, we like to think of this is a big way Democratic election because of what happened in the House. In the Senate, it was not such a good election for the Democrats, and he was not seriously challenged, even though he was running against an incumbent congressman from the western part of the state. So he'd be formidable.
I do want to circle around to one thing you did say. Maybe we are post-gaffe in this country. I mean, because if gaffes would bring somebody down, you know, President Trump would have been in trouble as candidate Trump. So maybe the worry about what Joe Biden says, what Uncle Joe says, maybe won't be the political headwind it has been in the past for him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe so. Like I said, I would never count out Joe Biden or really any of them. I mean, even though I've just cast doubt on Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren and those other candidates. If a candidate had to have matched up with Trump, they could certainly win. I don't know if they would, but I wouldn't write them out. I'm just saying that I think the job would be easier if they have someone that could win back these Midwestern states that were part of the so-called blue wall that, that Trump broke through. You know, there are scenarios where Democrats can win the election and not win those states back, or not win many of them back. I mean, it's still fairly close, but if you're a Democrat and you're not winning Michigan, you're making it very hard on yourself. And in Michigan has a lot of very similar voters to Ohio. Union, kind of traditional union voters. And Sherrod Brown over the weekend gave a speech in Nevada, and he said if he runs, he'll be the most pro-union candidate in the field. And that, to me, is sort of a proxy for not just union, but, looking out for, blue-collar voters. I mean, he can make the same case Trump made, that look at this big portion of America that's been left behind. Trump promised to fix it, and he hasn't fixed it. And then, we can debate, whether things have improved and how much, and whether Trump deserves credit or blame. But, he could at least make that case, and I think that he would be more credible making the case, than a Harvard-educated lawyer like Elizabeth Warren, who could be painted as an elitist much more easily than Sherrod Brown could. Brown's problem, of course, is breaking through the big Democratic field and actually winning the nomination. He'd have a much harder time doing that.
You must have missed that Instagram Live with Elizabeth Warren from about a month ago. She was in her kitchen. She had a beer. She's just like the rest of us. She sits in the kitchen, drinks beer, and she has a dog. I think it was a stunt beer, a stunt dog, and a stunt husband, but she showed us she was just like the rest of us.
Well, it didn't look natural, and it was kind of like the caucus on the tank, right?
Yes.
Or John Kerry out in the hunting gear. When politicians do things that they don't normally do to show that they're a regular guy or gal, it tends to come off pretty badly. And that's the impression I got from watching. Now, who knows? Maybe Elizabeth Warren is just pounding six-packs, all night long. I mean, but she didn't look natural. I'll say it that way. Sherrod Brown is a long, long, long shot in this. His only shot is that he can exceed expectations in the early primary states. They come out of, Iowa and New Hampshire in the top four or five in both of those states. And then he'd at least have a shot to make the case that he's the most electable Democrat and could appeal to those voters that the Democrats lost. There's a lot of polling that suggests that Democrats this year want a candidate who can beat Trump, and that's their number one priority, and are willing to vote for a candidate in the primary that they don't agree with on everything if that candidate can beat Trump. So that gives Brown an edge. And, as I said before, it's not like he's like some Joe Manchin Democrat that is crossways with them on all the issues. He's with them on all the issues. I mean, he should be acceptable to the broad range of the Democratic Party because his views are right there. But he's sort of tonally more moderate. He doesn't, talk about political revolutions all the time like Bernie Sanders does. And he speaks in, kind of understated language that I think doesn't scare people, but still has the liberal chops to back it up. I think he'd be strong. I think he'd be, if he actually got the nomination, would be poised to reassemble that Obama coalition. A lot of people seem to think that Obama won because he was this non-white candidate and, black and Hispanic voters out in these really high numbers, which he did. But he also won because he appealed. Remember, first term Obama, what's up, red America or blue America or black America or white America?
Very aspirational. America. Yes.
People love that.
Yep, absolutely. All right, people want to read more about this. Brendan, go to the website.
Yeah, you can go to KirbyOnPolitics.com, look up Kirby's Take, and you can hit me up on Twitter at Brendan K. Kirby.
And if somebody has yet to pick up a copy of Wicked Mobile, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah, you can get it online. You can go to Arcadia Publishing, get it direct from the publisher. You can go to Barnes & Noble, local bookstores, and you can check us out on Wicked Mobile on Facebook.
There you go, Brendan. I appreciate it, man. We'll check in soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Imagine some lineup here for 2020 is going to be anything but boring. That's for sure. 12:51, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:55, FM Talk 106.5, 1 week out from Fat Tuesday. Also 1 week out from session, starting up in Montgomery. Coincidence? I think so. By the way, too, speaking on the Mardi Gras front, our buddy Steve Joint from the Mobile Mask joins us here in just a couple minutes. Some Mardi Gras talk. And speaking of more Mardi Gras talk, my buddy here. I do like it when competition becomes charitable or charity becomes competition. But he had earlier this morning said he'd match dollar for dollar up to $250 for throws for the Families of the Fallen float. And then somebody steps up and matches it. He said, well, okay, I'm going to double it to $500. So y'all do this. I'm going to do this right now. Because I could just say, hey, double it. But I will incentivize this because I've two things. It's the right thing to do. And it puts this individual, a good guy, on the spot. Somebody who's going to step up and match his $500. So that'd be a total of his $500 and your $500,000 donation to Family of the Fallen to put the throws on the float for these 27 family members of law enforcement officers that have been killed or injured in the line of duty. For these family members, if you will step up to match his $500, makes a total of $1,000 donation for these throws. I will auction off at a date that we can agree on, the two of us, whoever does this and myself, you get to be co-host of this show. So I've had people ask me before and offer me money, you know, to Milibica, and I said, I don't do that. I don't kind of, I'll do that. For this, I'll do that. So $500 donation, contact us through the station or Family of the Fallen, have them contact us. Either way, you match this other $500 donation. So you're in for $500. This other person, this good guy, is in for $500. That's $1,000 total to Family of the Fallen. You get to co-host the show. As long as you don't get me in a FCC fine. Okay, you keep it clean. You come in and co-host in a future edition of Midday Mobile. So there you go. Y'all can hit us up on the text line 343-0106, or if you want to keep it direct to the email, my email is Sean SEAN at fmtalk1065.com. So SEAN at fmtalk1065.com. $500, and you are co-host on Midday Mobile on a date to be determined between you and I. So there you go. Steve Joint joins us here in just a second. Lots of Mardi Gras to talk about with him. Remember, keep up with the Moon Pie Minute 2, the podcast, let alone we air them throughout the day here at FM Talk 106.5. The 25 that have already run are in podcast form and waiting for you over at fmtalk1065.com.